Thank you very much. Good evening, everybody. So, Abraham Lincoln, Calvin Coolidge, Ronald Reagan, these were great American presidents, great Republican presidents. I don't think Donald Trump is likely to join their ranks. Ulysses S. Grant, Herbert Hoover, Richard Nixon, these were Republican presidents. They were unexceptional Republican presidents. I think it's likely that Donald Trump will join their ranks. That's why the title of my presentation tonight is, Donald Trump is not Ronald Reagan, but he's not Hillary Clinton either. Though I didn't vote for him in the primary, my goal this evening is to argue that, although imperfect, conservatives should vote for Donald J. Trump for president, and that it's imprudent to either not vote or to vote for a third-party candidate. Before proceeding, let me thank Northwest Ohio Conservative Coalition for organizing and sponsoring this debate, Fred LePiva for moderating this debate, and Mr. Allegrini for agreeing to participate in this debate. Though I know that what I'm going to say now may cause some marital discord later this evening, I think that the question of who conservatives should vote for in the upcoming election is one about which reasonable conservatives can disagree. So it's great to have a forum for us to talk about, present arguments, and then have a discussion afterwards. And thank you for coming out to this debate to learn more about, to inform yourselves about the way you should exercise your franchise. I'm going to make three moves tonight. First, I'm going to present a positive case why conservatives should vote for Donald Trump. Second, I'm going to argue that third-party voting or not voting at all is imprudent. Third, I'm going to show that a common argument used for voting for not voting for Donald Trump is unpersuasive. First, conservatives should vote for Donald Trump. The standard that I use to evaluate which candidate to vote for is two parts. First, there needs to be a viable candidate. Second, and the candidate must most closely approximate my conservative-inspired policy positions. I'm going to address that first prong, that the candidate must be viable, in my second point, my second step tonight, where I'm going to argue that it's imprudent to not vote for Donald Trump. Now, I'm going to present the argument that Donald Trump is the viable candidate that most closely approximates our conservative policy views. And by conservative policy views, what I mean are looking at the Republican Party platform. And I look at the Republican Party platform because it's what the majority of conservatives in America think are conservative positions. And second, when you look at the platform, it's maybe the most conservative Republican Party platform we've had, at least since I've been politically awake. I'm arguing now that conservatives should vote for Donald Trump because he most closely approximates conservative policy positions. Many prominent conservative leaders, including many I highly respect, have taken the position that there's no difference between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And that position, I think, is patently incorrect on many of the candidates' positions. On nearly all important policy issues and on many minor issues, Donald Trump is closer to most conservative policy positions than the alternative. So think of all the issues that are important to conservatives, from life to gun rights, immigration to the size of government. Each of these issues, Donald Trump is significantly better than Hillary Clinton. And because of time constraints, I'll only mention the most important. But remember, I'm not saying that Donald Trump holds the ideal position on any of these issues. In fact, I think that the answer is he doesn't on almost all of these issues. Rather, I'm arguing that Donald Trump is taking the closer position to the ideal position than Hillary Clinton. So thinking of economic freedom, Fred mentioned Donald Trump's past practice. I think if there's one thing you can say about Donald Trump, it's that he's somebody who's engaged in the market in a way that Hillary Clinton's life shows that she's not. And he stated that he's committed to increasing freedom, including economic freedom. On trade, Donald Trump wants to increase wages and jobs for blue-collar Americans by renegotiating trade deals and being prudent about those new deals. On the role of government, Donald Trump has promised to repeal Obamacare, which would increase freedom and would also offer greater insurance coverage to average Americans. Regarding taxes, he wants to reduce the tax rate to a flat rate of 15% for businesses. Thinking of social issues, Donald Trump wants to protect unborn human beings from murder. It's a strong pro-life position. He's endorsed by the National Right to Life. On education, Donald Trump wants to promote education and federalism by repealing and rejecting the Common Core. On religious liberty, Donald Trump is in favor of respecting religious liberty, including in particular the ability of churches to speak on presidential candidates or political issues as well, by repealing the so-called Johnson Amendment. And just as a side note, I did a debate last week on whether Christians should vote for Donald Trump or not. And there were two sides to that debate. It was a great debate. But unfortunately, we actually had a terrible time finding institutional church organizations that would advertise it, and they all appealed to the Johnson Amendment. On immigration, Donald Trump wants to protect America while welcoming new Americans. Enforcing existing immigration laws, building a wall to limit illegal immigration, terrorism and drugs, limiting immigration from countries with significant terrorist networks. Looking at Europe, which is descending into crime and cultural revolution because of its bad immigration policies, shows another way in which Trump is the better candidate. On the Second Amendment, Donald Trump is a strong advocate for gun rights. Thinking of international affairs, Donald Trump wants to project an America is good position. Donald Trump is pro-Israel, and he wants to aggressively identify by name what terrorism is and fight it. And one way, I think, to capture all of these different issues, which I've just pinpointed because of time constraints, is to think about Donald Trump's position on the Supreme Court. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court decides many important issues that are central to our society. And I say unfortunately because that's not what the Supreme Court's role is supposed to be. The Supreme Court is supposed to follow what the Constitution says and abide by it, but the Supreme Court has misinterpreted the Constitution and misinterpreted its role, for good or ill, and imposes one-size-fits-all on the country, like Roe versus Wade. Because of the Supreme Court's self-aggrandizement, presidential Supreme Court nominations transcend just one issue, because Supreme Court justices decide so many issues. Abortion, marriage, the size of government, gun rights, free speech, religious liberty, and the list goes on and on. And it's very likely that the next president's going to nominate at least four Supreme Court justices, which, if that person is Hillary Clinton, will solidify a liberal majority for at least 30 years. And if it's a Donald Trump, my argument's going to be, would solidify a conservative majority for that same period of time. So thinking about the role of government, in 2012, the Supreme Court decided NFIB versus Sebelius. It was a 5-4 decision. The conservatives won on the position as does Congress have the Commerce Clause authority to require Americans to engage in commerce? And the conservatives said no. The four liberals said yes. A Hillary Clinton Supreme Court would reverse that decision and give Congress the power to require you to engage in transactions Congress wanted to. Thinking of free speech, Citizens United versus FEC was a 2010 5-4 decision where the conservatives ruled that the free speech clause allowed citizens to organize in a corporate form and engage in free speech activities. A Hillary Clinton Supreme Court has Hillary Clinton has identified as that as one of the key decisions that she would like her court to overrule. On social issues like abortion, Casey versus Planned Parenthood was the 1992 5-4 decision that upheld Roe versus Wade. A Hillary Clinton Supreme Court would affirm Roe versus Wade, reject bans on partial birth abortion, and many other restrictions on abortion, such as ambulatory care facility standards and admitting privileges. Thinking of religious liberty, Hobby Lobby versus Burwell decided 2 years ago was a 5-4 conservative decision that protected private business religious liberty by business owners. At the Second Amendment, a Hillary Clinton Supreme Court would reverse the Heller versus District of Columbia decision that protected individual rights and rule in favor of more robust gun control. So there's a whole bunch of issues that the Supreme Court discusses. Donald Trump, I think, is right on the Supreme Court justices that he would appoint, and so therefore, all of those issues are arguments in Trump's favor. And in fact, thinking about the list of judges that Donald Trump identified earlier, that actually, I think, supports Donald Trump in three important ways. First, it shows that Donald Trump would nominate good justices. So the list that he put forward a couple of months ago is a list of the conservative rock star judges and justices across the country. Second, it shows that Donald Trump has good advisors. So Supreme Court justices aren't his area, right? Nobody, I don't think anybody thinks he's an expert on the Constitution. But he has advisors, and he has to pick advisors who are able to point him to correct information. Third, Donald Trump listened to them. So one of the criticisms is that Donald Trump doesn't listen to anybody. He listened to good advisors in that situation. Now, I know many of you are thinking, sure, Trump says he's pro-life or that he supports gun control, or gun, Freudian slip, gun rights, but how can we trust him? Hasn't he said different things before? That's a fair criticism. Let me make three moves in response to it. First, let's assume that's true. Let's assume that we shouldn't trust Donald Trump's professed pro-lifeness or purported love of gun rights. So what we should do is we should discount our trust in his position. So he's not 100% pro-life. Let's discount it. Let's say it's 50% pro-life, that he's only 50% of the way to the where we would want him to be ideally. That still makes him 50% better than Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton supports taxpayer-funded abortion international promotion of abortion for minors, partial birth abortion, military hospital abortion, mandatory medical school training of abortion, required religious hospital performings of abortion, and on and on. So even if you discount Donald Trump's professed positions by 50%, make it 60%, make it 40%, he's still 50% better than Hillary Clinton. Second, we have good reasons to believe that Donald Trump's positions are true. For example, Donald Trump has given reasons for his changes in positions on many of these issues. He said, "Let me be clear, I am pro-life. I did not always hold this position, but I had a significant personal experience that brought the precious gift of life into perspective for me." Second, the major issues organizations like Right to Life or like National Rifle Association have endorsed Donald Trump after conversation and evaluation. And the major anti-conservative issue organizations like Planned Parenthood have endorsed Hillary Clinton. Third, we can be confident that Donald Trump would receive, quote, help sticking with his policies. Historically, presidents traditionally follow the policies in the election positions that they've taken. With rare exceptions, presidents generally follow those policies. So think of George H.W. Bush. I think it's clear that George H.W. Bush was not pro-life up until he ran for president, and that he had a conversion, and for the most part, he was pro-life while he was president. Or think of the opposite, right? How often do presidents take positions on prominent issues and change it? I think the most prominent example is Richard Nixon, where he was a strong anti-communist, he had been for years, and what did he do? He went to China. But the reason why we remember that is because it's so exceptional for presidents to go back on their word on major party issues. Second, there'll be people advising Donald Trump in the White House that everybody recognizes as conservative, like Mike Pence. Third, Republicans in Congress will help Donald Trump maintain his positions. And fourth, public pressure by conservatives like you and I will help Donald Trump maintain his positions. Let me acknowledge that Donald Trump is not the perfect candidate. He's taken and not revised positions that I think are wrong. So for example, he's very aggressive in advocating for government taking of private property. That's not right. He's also advocated the non-targeted killing of innocent people in the war on terror. That's not right. He's also not 100% trustworthy on correct positions he's taken. I think on the right to life issue, he's not 100% pro-life. His character, as well, may cause him to not effectively pursue the policies he says he believes in. So he says he's for traditional marriage. I don't think he's going to advocate for that as strongly as somebody like Ted Cruz would have. At the same time, we need to remember the question that we're asking. Is he less perfect compared to what? Hillary Clinton has a significantly more deeply flawed character and has significantly worse policy positions than Donald Trump. Furthermore, more other Republicans and conservatives will be able to check any potential Donald Trump excesses. Lastly, I actually think it's important to note that some of Donald Trump's personal character flaws likely will have a positive effect on our society. So for example, Donald Trump goes beyond the conventions on how people speak to each other. So remember during the debates, he would call Marco Rubio Little Marco? I don't think that's appropriate. He would call Senator Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas. He called for temporarily banning Muslim immigration. I don't approve of Donald Trump saying those things. At the same time, Donald Trump's willingness to go beyond the current conventions provides the space that the rest of us need to speak more freely in areas where it's appropriate to say the things that we want to say. And just to give you one example, so in the law school, at the University of Toledo, I'm in charge of organizing a lecture series, and it's been made known to me that there's an issue that's off the table. So one of my colleagues said to me, "Don't be bringing anybody in to talk about homosexual marriage. That issue is over." So people like me, people like you, need the space that Donald Trump provides by being on the frontiers of free speech. That was my first move. My second move, which is shorter, is that voting for a third party is not prudent. Donald Trump is the only viable candidate for conservatives, and voting for another candidate will not advance the common good, because no other candidate will have the authority to do so. Our political system is, for good or evil, a two-party system, and has been since 1840. There has been no third-party candidate ever who has won the presidency, with one exception, Abraham Lincoln. But the conditions of that election don't apply to today. There was a civil war brewing. The major party, the Democratic Party, had fractured. So those two conditions were necessary for the United States to have a third-party candidate win. Those conditions don't apply today. Second, with condolences to my Libertarian Party friends here, the party that many conservatives think as a viable third-party alternative has no evidence suggesting that its candidate can win. the Libertarian Party presidential candidates have topped out at 1% of the popular vote in 1980. The Libertarian Party has no members in Congress and only a handful of members in the state legislatures. The current Libertarian Party candidates have relatively high poll numbers for a Libertarian, but they remain at a ceiling of around 10%. There is no evidence to believe that Johnson will be able to multiply his support by 500% in the next 2 months. As an aside, Donald Trump is also better than Gary Johnson on many important conservative issues. Gary Johnson is pro-choice until, quote, late term. Gary Johnson supports homosexual marriage. Gary Johnson supports legalized prostitution. Gary Johnson does not support building a wall and wants to, quote, incentivize immigration, among other positions. Third, conservatives have pointed to the Constitution Party as a viable third party, but this has even less evidence supporting it than does the Libertarian ticket. First, the Constitution Party has never won any elected office anywhere. It's not going to go from zero offices to the presidency in one election, much less multiple elections. Second, it's actually hard to find evidence for support for the Conservative Party or the Constitution Party, so let's take a look at Facebook likes as a proxy for the amount of support that the Constitution Party receives. It has about 30,000 Facebook likes on its Facebook page, which actually surprised me. I didn't realize it was that much. The Republican Party Facebook page has over 2 million likes. That is 1/70th of the Republican Party's likes. It's not likely the Constitution Party is going to multiply its support 70 times in the next 2 months. And 30,000 votes, the number of likes, is not even enough to get it voted to win in a Toledo election, much less the entire United States. On a side note, Donald Trump has the potential to expand the Republican Party coalition for the first time in a long time by appealing to blue-collar Americans who, for a lot of reasons, haven't voted Republican. When my family and I went to the Donald Trump rally a couple of Wednesdays ago, one of the things I noticed was the conversations were different than the previous Romney conversations. Instead of it being people from Sylvania, there were those folks at the Donald Trump rally. There were a lot of people at the rally who were talking about things that were clearly of interest to working-class Americans, like where cars are manufactured. So if you believe, like I do, that the Republican Party has been a flawed but still better alternative vehicle for advancing conservative policies, then Donald Trump's capacity to increase the party's share of the electorate gives him the potential to reshape American politics for the better. Furthermore, voting for Donald Trump is more effective than the alternative advocated by Mr. Allegrini, which has also been taken by European conservatives, of voting for a third party. Conservatives in America are able to exercise an outsized influence in the United States because we're the major element in one of the two major parties, and we need to maintain that position in that party. Conservatives, frankly, are a political minority in the United States and for the foreseeable future. Yet, through our control and influence over the Republican Party, we have outsized political influence. And compare that to Europe. Conservatives in Europe, they're pure, all right, and they have literally no influence in European countries. And take an analogy to purchasing a car. I think that you can see that my argument, which is that conservatives should not vote for a third party, is powerful by looking at other areas of human life, like buying a car. So assume your family is in the market for a car. Perhaps your family is like mine, and you now have a teenager who is driving. Shudder. You need to buy a car that will advance your family's common good. It needs to be relatively safe, relatively efficient, and relatively reliable, though any car you purchase must meet a minimum level of safety, reliability, and efficiency. So your family would benefit from Mercedes or Lincoln, but you're okay with a Chevy or a Honda. The car market offers your family a limited range of options. There's no perfectly safe car, or perfectly reliable car, or perfectly efficient car. You have to choose among the available options of cars with their varying packages of safety, reliability, and efficiency. In other words, you have to choose the best imperfect car. Similarly, with your vote, you're in the market for a new president. You have policy positions that you want the president to meet, and you have minimum levels of policy positions. So anybody you vote for can't be a socialist, can't be pro-choice. But the market for presidents does not and has never offered a perfect president, one who matched all of our ideal positions. So you have to vote for the best imperfect candidate. My third move, which is the shortest of all, is to say that a common argument against voting for Trump is unpersuasive. I often hear conservatives say that we should not vote for the lesser of two evils. And I think this argument fails for a lot of reasons. First, I've made a positive case that Donald Trump has sound positions on important policy issues, like the right to life. Second, that argument, don't vote for the lesser of two evils, it proves too much. because no candidate can meet its implicit standard of non-evilness. Until the second coming of Jesus Christ, assuming he's a candidate for office, which I doubt, we will always be voting for imperfect human beings. Some candidates will be better than others. We've had those in the past. We will have those in the future. But all will be flawed. All will be, quote, evil in some way. Third, the argument also proves too much because it would mean that conservatives cannot vote for a major party candidate in the entire Western world. And since conservatives should participate in their country's political lives and advance the common good, that argument leads to the result that conservatives have no influence in politics in the Western world. So if you lived in the United Kingdom, or France, or Italy, you would have to thank heavens for a candidate with conservative policy positions like Donald Trump. So tonight I've argued that Donald Trump is not Ronald Reagan, but I think he's clearly better than Hillary Clinton. And let me end by leaving a question for Scott. How does your position not lead to conservatives having no political influence like conservatives in Europe? Thank you very much.